Number 44 of the 48 ways is Shoel Umeshiv. Shoel means he asks questions. Umeshiv means he answers them. Now, these aren't two separate things, but it's one and the same thing. He asks questions and he answers them, which means in order to live, you've got to learn how to analyze the whole business of living. You can't just see what you see and go on. You have to analyze it. So to focus your attention, they say to you, look, everybody knows what's going on in Beirut. We get the information this way. PLO recognized 242. Shall we go in? Should we go in? We need to go in. The television says this way. The UN says that way. Sharon says this way. The Peace Now says that way. And we sit there and we're a sponge. What's your opinion? Do you understand in order to deal with current events, you have to learn to analyze? What are the issues? What do I think has to be done? Why do I think so? Why do people differ? Where are they coming from? And you have to answer these questions. That's participating. That's reading the news intelligently. You have to analyze. You have to answer your question. You can't just sit there passively and read the columnists who will analyze the news for you and give you their pre-digested opinion. You've got to do the job. Did you ever hear that quote, ask a Jew a question and he answers with a question? You see, in yeshivas and the Jewish people, all our career, that's exactly what we did. We analyzed. So if somebody asks you, how you feeling? You say, well, you mean spiritually? Or do you mean physically? Or financially? Or, how can I answer you? First, I got to know what you're talking about. He analyzes, you know, what are the possibilities? Today, how would you react? How you feeling? Fine. And today, it's the proper response, because he doesn't ask the question to find out how you're feeling spiritually, financially. He says, how you feeling? He doesn't really want an answer. Yeah. But at one time, you know, people meant what they said, they analyzed what was, and this is what you have to do in order to live. You got to realize where people are coming from, but at the same time, you want to understand, really, what is living about. So here we're going to divide it up into three halves. It's the questions, that's the first half, Roman numeral one. The answers, how do you go about answering the questions, that's Roman numeral two. And Roman numeral three, that third section, is how to apply it for living. So, Roman numeral one is, first there are the formal questions. That's a fantastic tool in and of itself. The formal questions that are really begging for answers. And those formal questions are the questions that we try to drill you into, and that's what you got to do. You got to drill. You know what questions we constantly repeat in this class, in the 48 ways? What? First define. What do we got to do? How? How do we go about it? These are begging for their own answers, right? Why? Why do we need it? And Lemaisa, what are we going to do about it? Before you're going to argue whether there is free will or not, ask yourself, what do I mean by free will? How do I use it? Why is it so? And what am I going to do about it? Okay, so these questions are formal questions. You just got to pick up the habit, drill them, and you'll got it. Number two is appreciate that these four questions are four of the 48 ways. The question of what is the second of the 48 ways, that Shmiat Ha'ozen. Define your terms. So it's turned into a tool, a question. What? How? Is Lomen Amanas Lasos. Apply your learning. Why? Is Bina Talev. These four questions are direct applications of the 48 ways. Realize that there is a class that we follow up the 48 ways with, and that is the applications, the tools class. 48 questions that you should ask, formal questions that you can ask to use the 48 ways as a tool for digging into a concept. All right, number three is that there are more difficult questions that you can't ask on everything. And what questions are they? They are called questions of opportunities. You have to see a relationship between one concept and another. You can't just formalize it. Yeah? You can formalize it. You can say, is there any contradiction to what I've heard before? Right? But it's something you have to pick up. Like, should we love humanity?
What do you say? Should you love humanity?
Yeah.
Can I obligate you to love?
No. Is there a contradiction in those two statements? In those two answers? You should love humanity, but we can't obligate you to love. Then what do you mean by should? What is that? Should means there's a... Do you see that? What's your name? Sam?
Scott.
Do you see that if you say should, it means it's the right thing to do, right? What else does should mean? You should love humanity. Everybody is in favor. We should all love every human being, except for the really bad ones, right? Yeah? All right, analyze. It seems to me there's a contradiction. If you say you should, it means it's the right thing to do. Do you have an obligation to do the right thing? If you would say it is nice, it is a sweet thing to fall in love with humanity, yeah, all right. But if you're using the word should means it's something that is an obligation. It's the right thing to do. Seems to me. You think differently, fine. I'm not arguing the issue. You know? I'm just showing this is a question of opportunity, that you have to catch this. Hey, look what I said here. Look what I said there. Is there a contradiction? Is one of them right? Is one of them wrong? Are they both right? These are questions that you have to pick up. You can't say, what? How? Why? You have to be sensitive to the contradictions, to the comparisons, to the things that deal with each other. B of this is that there are special techniques in Torah which I don't suggest that you use for the world, because the world happens to be a bit redundant. You see, in the Torah, the Almighty is not redundant. He doesn't repeat something. So you have to ask yourself, why is it repeated? He's not verbose. Yeah, he doesn't use extra words, right? So you have to say, why is this word? He doesn't arbitrarily use a term. So you say, why are there different names of God? Why does it say the Almighty Yudke Vovke spoke to Moses, and Elohim spoke to Moses, and Shakai spoke to Moses, and why the different names? You can have a sense of this. There is a sense of it, like in Shakespeare. Why does he use the Almighty in one sentence, and why does he use the All-Knowing in another? He is word-conscious. Yeah? But at the same time, it might just be that it rhymes better. Yeah? Might just be. Or it might be the word that popped in his mind. It doesn't necessarily have a sensible reason. But in Torah... And that goes for the rabbis. Why do they use this particular word? Why do they use this particular description? It is only for the genius of Torah. You learn how to pay attention to particular questions for Torah education. Number four is the point of all of this, of the questions, is to have an automatic, on an immediate basis. That you're always asking, what does it mean? How does it affect me? Why do I need this? All the time. And it's an immediate basis. Not that you have to ask yourself, now I am going to analyze. Somebody asks you how you're feeling, what, how, why. Yeah? You don't have to use it. It doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean a thing. He just wants to say hello. Hello.
How are you?
I'm feeling fine. How are you? Okay. Fine. Yeah? Doesn't mean a thing. Don't get excited. Yeah? But you have to ask yourself, what, how, why. It's got to be constant. And how do you do that? You drill. Make your own drill. Take a whole lot of concepts. Drill. What does it mean? How do you do it? You know? What, how, why? And answer your questions. Yeah. Number five is that for contradictions and comparisons, these subtle things, there you need a class or long experience. Now, in the yeshivas, that's what we teach you. We teach you how to ask questions. That's our tool. That's the way that is adopted amongst yeshivas. You know, in the world at large, there are different tools that are made a whole way of life. And it's powerful to learn from them. The Hasidim use joy. The Balei Musa use know yourself, bina talev. The yoga use accept pain or accept frustration, the different types of yoga. Transcendental meditation uses purity. These are all one of the 48 ways. And if people perfect it, it's powerful. In the yeshiva movement, in the Jewish people today, they are perfecting analyzing. Because the rest of it comes from analyzing the text, etc. So they look at analyzing as the basic technique, and we're very good at it. B of this is that here in a yeshiva, we give you
classes to drill you on giving you the exposure. If you see enough questions, then you pick it up yourself. Then you learn immediately, what kind of a statement is that? Bong. Yeah. In the old days, in Jewish consciousness day, the guy who would come with a question that nobody thought of, a new question, he was the star of the yeshiva, of the community. The respected individual of the community. A question nobody thought of? Fantastic! Where are we? How did we pass that one up? He got ultimate respect. And I want you to know another thing. In Jewish consciousness, I'll tell you. You see, in American Western consciousness, I don't know if it's still going on. In Western consciousness, they used to bronze, silver plate, gold plate, that child's first pair of shoes, right? Do you know why? You can't really appreciate it until you have your children. You know why they did that? What's this momentum? It's a beautiful thing to see your child take his first steps. It's gorgeous. The first steps. I mean, it's the first tottering steps. You gotta have your own child. Can you tell them? Yeah? Beautiful. Right? And they want to remember it. Because it's like, it's a step, it's a graduation, it's like a diploma, it's an autonomous, right? In Jewish consciousness, I can tell you what I remember. I remember his first steps, my first son's first steps. You know what I remember? His first kasha. The first time he caught a contradiction. Yeah? I'll tell you what he asked. The next 50 people came to visit us and say, "You want to hear what my son asked?" Of course, after that, he plagued me with all kinds of questions, right? He knew what he was getting recognition for. He understands that he would come back with all kinds of questions, right? But that's all right, because that means he's autonomous. Do you see that? He says, "How can that be, Dad? How can that be?" Yeah? I can tell you, someday I'll tell you. I remember Matis, my first son, firstborn, the first question he asked when he was all of 5 years old. Contradiction in court. Yeah.
What was the question?
What was the question? Yeah. See, my wife was expecting another child, and he was aware of this. Yeah. So he came home one day, and he asked my wife, he said, "What do you want, a boy or a girl?" So my wife said, "Look, whatever we got, you know, whatever the Almighty gives us, we'll be fine." He says, "I didn't ask you. Well, it'll be fine. I want to know which do you prefer. Which do you like, a boy or a girl?" Yeah. So she told him, you know, what's the difference? Whatever. He says, "I want to know because I want to pray." Yeah. So my wife says to him, "Look," she says, "you know, after a certain amount of time, once the baby is formed, you're not allowed to pray. Not allowed to pray. You can pray before the baby is formed. After 3 months, you're not allowed to pray. Because that's asking for a miracle. We don't ask for miracles. Yeah? The baby is already a boy or a girl. You don't change him. Yeah? That's a tefillah shof, right?" He says, "That can't be." My wife says, "What do you mean?" He says, "I learned in Cheder today that Rochel, that Dina was expecting her seventh child, and she prayed that it be a girl so that Rochel Imenu would have a chance at having one of the Shiftei Kol, one of the 12 tribes, right? It turned into Dina." Yeah? So he says, "You're telling me that you can't pray." And she prayed, and it was changed into a girl. Beautiful. Online. Fantastic. Now, how come? There are times when you pray for miracles. No, you've got to explain to him. There are times that you can pray for miracles. That's the answer. There are plenty of times, God forbid, your son has got a cancer or whatever it is, you pray for a miracle. You do. You ask the Almighty for miracles. But it's not common practice. But hey, as far as he was concerned, it was a contradiction. You follow? And that contradiction, we gave him full credit. He was alert. He saw. Okay, so at any rate, the Jewish people used to drill this. And it's something that you would have had, yeah, if Jewish consciousness was around. Number six is that there is a PhD of questions. There's a PhD of questions, and that's what you get in a yeshiva. At one time, the yeshivas had students who knew all of Torah. They knew the whole Bible. They knew everything. They knew the Mishnah. They knew the Talmud. They knew how to ask the questions and answer the questions. So they developed in the yeshiva study the PhD of questions, which is a shir. If you become sophisticated enough, then you walk into a class where a great rabbi will ask a question upon another question, come to a conclusion, show you that this must be the premise, and then bring you another conclusion from somewhere else and show you that there's a contradiction, and put together another 5 contradictions which show you that this is an impossible situation, and then cut through and give you the principle that will answer them all. That's the PhD of questions and answers. A shir in a yeshiva gedola, in the graduate school of a yeshiva, where people really are aware, they're fast, they know what it's about, they listen to the whole structure, they follow, they see that they could have taken it a step further. That's what a yeshiva is about, you should know, you know, that's what they're doing. So they're really dealing with wisdom, but they're dealing with the techniques of putting together the full picture. Number 7 is, as we already mentioned, that there are special questions that are due to the genius of Torah, and there you simply have to have the definition of the material and the drill in asking the questions. What is redundant? What are the words? When are they used? Etc., etc. That takes a lot of practice. Yeah? A lot of practice. Number 8 is that there's the complete question almanac and dictionary and illustrative book. The do-it-yourself guide to questions and answers, and that is the Talmud. That's there to teach us how to analyze, how to ask the questions, how to use each one of the 48 ways. And you're welcome to stick around. We'll give you an introduction. We'll start you on your career. All right, now Roman numeral 2 is the answers. Okay, so we got the questions. Now what do we do about the answers? Number 1 about the answers is that realize the point of all questions are the answers. Don't stop. A question isn't the end of the game. In Yiddish, they used to say, from a question, shtalt man it. You don't die because you got a question. You think about it. Yeah? So realize that a question is a tool for clarification. You don't understand. Yeah? Sometimes the question will blow away a premise. But just because you got a question is just an invitation to further clarification and to see what is the miscomprehension. So, for example, when I was going to university, if you challenged a guy and say, listen, I'll give you proof that there's a God, fix. He had to be an intellectual. He had to come out, gird on his armor, you know, and take you on. Can you imagine such a time? It wasn't so long ago. Today, you ask a guy, come on, I'll prove to you that there's a God. He says, I'm not interested. Not interested as to whether there's a God. It's irrelevant. I prefer not to know. Mind-boggling, the answers you get today. Try it out, you know. But at any rate, the one question that people would pick up, you know, you say, I'm an atheist. Give me the evidence. How do you know that there is no God? And you say, can God make a stone that he can't pick up? Did you ever hear that one? Yeah. You heard that? How many heard that? Yeah. Can God make a stone he can't pick up? It's still in vogue, yeah. Now, do you know the answer to that? You see, the question doesn't make the end of the story. Yeah. It's a lack of clarification. It's a lack of clarity. So how do you analyze it? That's the idea, to get the direction of answers. How do you analyze it? First of all, you have to appreciate that what is the assumption? The whole question is based on the concept that God is all-powerful. Is that right? That the definition of God is almighty, all-powerful. The god of Zeus couldn't make Zeus. You remember Zeus? He was a Greek, you know. And if you ask, can he make a stone he can't pick up? What do you mean? You can fool him. You can cheat him. You can trip him up, put him in a sack. I mean, there was all kinds of things you could do to him. Yeah? So can he make a stone he can't pick up? Sure he can. But we Jews, we taught the world, we came across to the world that the Almighty, all-powerful, almighty, beyond anything. So they say, if that's your premise, the Jewish God, right, then we'll give you an inherent contradiction. He's all-powerful. Can he make a stone that he can't pick up? Which means, if you say that he can make a stone that he can't pick up, say he can't pick it up. He's not all-powerful. On the other hand, if you say he can't make a stone that he can't pick up, yeah, well then, he's not all-powerful. He can't make that stone. Yeah? You see that? That's the question.
So first, whenever you want to answer a question, get it direct, understand the premises, and understand the question. Yeah? Now, where do you look for an answer? Where do you look for an answer? Let's see. It's a good question.
Now let's define. What does all-powerful mean? All-powerful means that he can't be weak. Is that right? Is that the definition? So if God is all-powerful, do you think that God can break his leg? No. Can he forget something? No. Right? He can't be weak. Any weakness. Right? That's the definition of all-powerful. So you say, all-powerful has got a contradiction. He can't be weak. No, that's the definition. That's what all-powerful means. Okay, now let's apply it to the question. Can God make a stone he can't pick up? Can he?
No.
No. Because he's all-powerful. There can't be a stone that he can't pick up. So he can't be weak. So there you have a question, and the method of tracking it down and getting a clarity. And now you understand that when you say all-powerful, you don't really focus on the meaning of that term. All-powerful, friend, is almighty powerful. Okay, so number two is that realize that there are the simple questions, the formal questions. I shouldn't say the simple question, but the formal questions, you just know it just takes time. What is free will? Don't give up. You're using it every day. You know, what is love? Look, you say you love someone, you must have a definition. Do you see that? You just have to have the patience to get in contact with your powers of articulation. But it's got to be something that you know. Noah, do you buffoon stick anyone? Why do you hope not? What's wrong with buffoon sticking people? What does buffoon stick mean? You see? You can't tell me you do or you don't. It just doesn't sound right. So you say, no, not me. At least, you know, no one says, I hope not. You know, I can't tell I'm not. But it doesn't sound like a nice thing to do. Do you see that? That unless we know, we have some sense of what a word means, we have our definition somewhere, we can't really answer. If it doesn't sound right, we can say, I hope not. We can say, I hope so. Somehow that's the connotations that we feel from some weird word. Where did you ever hear buffalo stick before? It's my own concoction, I thought. But do you understand the illustration, though? That we must know what love means. We must know what free will is. We must know what meaning is. We must know. Now you just have to have the patience to track it down. But you've got to appreciate that there must be some meaning to these words. So what, how, and why is just a question of learning to track it down, trying and trying again until you learn that you can come up with the answers. And that will broaden your knowledge, give it more impact, clarify. Yeah? Okay. Number four is to know that understanding fully is a long, tough haul. In Jewish consciousness, I personally have worked 10 years on one question. It's a long, tough haul. You don't give up. I don't say that I worked at it 8 hours a day for 10 years, right? But every time I said Kriya Shema, I wondered about it again. I tried this type of a solution and that type of a solution. What's the question? The question is that it says, you see, the Almighty is logical. It says in the Shema, love the Lord your God with all your desire, with all your life, with all your possessions. What's the question? Is that a logical presentation? What was that? If I tell you, love me with all you got, and also with $10. Yeah? I mean, you say, come on, you know, you said it already. You said it, yeah? If somebody's all your desire, all your life, and all your possessions, I'm going to take my possessions, you know. My life is more than my possessions. Does that make sense? Yeah?
do you see that there's a wrong progression? You start with the least. You say, not only with your possessions, friend, but I want you to love me with your life itself. Not only with your life, but with everything you desire. There are things that people desire more than life. All of it should be the pleasure of knowing God. Yeah.
So I worked on it a long time.
Got the answer. You guys, anybody who's working on it for 6 months, you can come to me, I'll give them the answer. Shortcut.
Yeah.
Okay, number five is that experience, there's, with experience, there's a point when a question is put up. I mean, you've got to, when you're a professional, it's like when you walk into a real professional diagnostician, a doctor with a diagnostician, you walk through the door, and he says, you have a pain in the leg, or I see that you are anemic, or where does he pick it up?
Yeah.
When you're a professional in questions and answers, when you hear a question, you immediately know the direction of the answer itself. The fact that you have a question over here that you need more details, you got to look up the sources. Yeah, is it, you sort it out immediately. You know where it's coming from. Now, this is not only in wisdom. The same thing goes when a guy over here walk in with a mechanic with your car, something's wrong. Yeah. He knows, like, the car's still moving, so it's not the tires.
Yeah, right?
He listens to the motor, and he says, it's the spark plugs, right? You got it? So the same thing goes with questions. With experience, you hear a question coming, you know which direction the answer. You need a little more information over here. Or this is a question that shakes my whole premise. Back to the drawing board. It's a professionalism that it really takes to know whether your position is well established, whether it's threatened, whether you want to change your opinion, etc. It takes a tremendous amount of experience. Do you see that? That's a powerful living. Okay. Roman numeral 3. For living, we've taught you what? Questions and answers. You ask the question, you give the answers and build it up. That's what the technique is. Now, how do you apply it to living? So number one is, ask your questions. For goodness sake, don't suffer your questions. Ask them, analyze them, find out, get your information, do it. Do you have a question as to whether or not there is a God? How come so many people believe in it, and how come so many people don't believe in it, and what is he doing in this world? Get your questions out of you and start answering them. What do you think that the answer is? How come there are so damn many religions in this world? Doesn't it bother you? Of course it bothers you. Khomeini is ready to die for himself, yeah? And kill all the Sunnis, right? And the Catholics are sure of their thing. And occasionally you come across a Jew
who's sure of his thing. Huh?
Occasionally. Not too often, right? But occasionally. And the Buddhists are into theirs, and the communists are into theirs. You know, what is man? What is knowledge? How do you know you know? It is bothering you. You've got to understand that it's bothering you. Do you see that? Well, then you've got to track it down. You just can't. You can't survive life. You have to live it. Every one of us is thinking, what is my potential in life? What's holding me back? Are we there or not? If you're there, don't let it lie there. Take it out and analyze it. Is that the real question? I think it through. You know you're not using your potential. You know you can study harder. You can play ball harder. The question is, how do I get myself moving? Right? I know, what's the problem with moving? I want to and I don't feel like it. And maybe we discovered free will. Huh? You've got to make a decision to move. All right, my friends, this is the idea. You've got to find your questions, and all of us are walking around with questions. You don't suffer these questions. You have to live with them. You have to live with them. But at the same time, number two is that for life, analyze. You're going to get married? Why? What is marriage? What does it take? It's silly to do something. You don't know what you're doing.
And you're going and do it, and that's why a lot of people get bounced right out of marriage.
Right. No, very discouraging. They don't know what they undertake. They don't have a definition. They don't understand what it's about. And then they have some expectations that don't happen. Yeah. They saw a movie where they live happily ever after. They were madly in love. You know, and that's the way it works. You know, every evening you come home. Hello, dear. Hello. You got to analyze, what is marriage? What is it? An arrangement? It's a contract? It's an obligation? It's a way of living cheaper than one? What is it? Then it goes down to even some simple things as touring. You have to analyze it. Why are you touring? What do you expect out of the touring? How are you going to get it? And you have to answer these questions. You have to analyze. Is this trip necessary? Can you get more pleasure and more fun staying home? Maybe a car is better than the trip. Yeah. What is your weight? You know, how are you going to estimate how much pleasure you're going to get out of touring all of Europe? And how much pleasure you're going to have out of a car? How many people you're going to be able to tell about it? Yeah.
So the endeavors of living, you have to analyze them in order to do it well. I'm making sense that this is something you've got to do. Okay, number three is problems.
When you're fighting.
Well, you have problems. You don't get along with people. You don't get along with your parents. You don't get along with the boss. You have all kinds of problems. You're depressed. You're lacking confidence. These are problems, right?
So instead of suffering problems, instead of worrying about it, instead of being anxious about it, instead of being miserable about it, what should you do? Analyze. Questions and answers. Analyze. What's your problem? What's going on around you? First, the definition. That's the first question. Yeah? How does it happen? My father thinks I'm wasting my life. Why does he think so? Well, because I am not looking for a job.
Is that a correct diagnosis?
No. I'm only wasting a year. All right. My father is disturbed by my wasting a year. Do you understand? Back and forth, analyze what is going on. Now, what do you want to do to your father? You want to relax him? It's only a year. How do you get it across? Am I making sense?
Anybody that's got a business that realizes that if you're losing money, you got to figure out the reason.
You don't just go about depressed. I'm losing money.
Yeah. Buying the wrong stuff. It's not moving. You're paying too much interest. The store overhead, cut down the overhead, get rid of the employees, shut your business. But you can't sit there losing money. You got it? You can't sit there losing life values.
Yeah. Okay, just one more, and that is what I started with. Current events, the situation of the Jewish people in the world. Is there such a thing as anti-Semitism? We suggest that there is. You know, we sense there's something going on, right? Is there the Arab lobby? Can it happen in America? Current events. Yeah. What do the newspaper stories tell you? What about the SALT talks? How about the fact that England and Germany are against a financial boycott of Russia? How about the fact that Poland owes $26 billion and there is no chance of their paying it and they want to reschedule the debt because if they default Poland, that's the end of the banking system? What does that mean? How does that affect you? What would happen with it? What do they mean that it will default the banking system? I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. Read. Well, what if there's an atom bomb? Analyze. What does it mean? How does it affect me? Why is this going on? What am I supposed to do about it? How do I go about doing it? What is the contradiction in humanity? When they read these stories and they go about with equanimity, is that one aspect of our insanity.
Definitely.
All right, why do we need this? Why do we need this? Because, you see, human beings just don't have instant wisdom. We just don't have instant solutions. We have to work on a concept in order to really understand its ramifications. And you need tools. Questions and answers are the best tools around. We're lazy, we're shallow, we just listen to the most profound pieces of wisdom, to the most horrifying pieces of news, and we don't even blink. You have to learn to tackle it with questions and answers in order to really deal with living. Number two of why we need this is because it's only by using questions and answers that we find our inconsistencies, our rationalizations, our defenses against our own values for living. If you're just walking through life, you can be inconsistent 1,000 times. Should you love humanity? Can't obligate me to do it. You can't teach wisdom. But I will try my very best to teach my children whatever I know about life. I am learning wisdom, but it can't be taught. Unless you analyze what you're talking about, you don't catch your own silliness. Isn't silliness? We have this propensity of being very silly. Number three is that, look, the rabbis say, Divrei Chachomim Mu'otim, V'Yoneim Merubim. The Almighty is very sparse in his explanation. He can be very eloquent. He can teach us everything. Yeah. And they say all the wise men are very sparse in their words, and their content is many. And they explain why. You see, the rabbis only give a list of 48 ways. You've got to analyze them by questions and answers. You've got to understand what they're talking about. You got to analyze what they're talking about. Why is that true? So the rabbis say, because the nature of a human being is to be independent. You say too much, he turns you off. He's got to discover. What you discover is your own. What you're told is ready to be put into the next trash basket, even if it's fascinating. Do you hear that? So if you don't analyze and make it your own, you just won't do anything with living. Never. If you don't put in that effort and make it your own, make your decisions, your evaluation, you'll never do anything with the most profound pieces of wisdom that come your way. Now, what can we do about it? So, look, we have the questions of what, how, and why. At least take out, know your questions that you're walking with. You're walking with the question, what, you want to be a good man? You really are perplexed. What is it that I really want to be? Why do I want to be? Why do you want to be good? Are you perplexed as to whether or not you have free will? Find five things that really are underneath, they're itching you. Yeah? And at least use the what, how, and why to analyze. For yourself, to analyze. What is it? You know, how far can you get?
I thank you.
You have been listening to Voices from Jerusalem. For a complete listing of our cassettes, see our web store at aish.com. For a free cassette catalog, email us at voices@aish.com or call toll-free in the U.S. 1-800-VOICES-3. Our main office is at 1 Western Wall Plaza, Jerusalem, Israel. Shalom from Jerusalem.